What's going on, everybody? Daryl Frater, the club CEO here, and we have another amazing episode of the My DJ Story podcast brought to you by The Club, the number one live streaming app for DJs and partygoers. Today, we have my brother, DJ Iron Mike, on the show. Brother, can you please introduce yourself? Tell the people who you are and where you're from.
My name is Mike Bacon, also known as DJ Iron Mike, born in Trenton, New Jersey, live in Hamilton, New Jersey, and I've been DJing for 25 years.
Awesome, brother. From the hometown, I was born and raised in Trenton, New Jersey. I currently live in Ewing, so I'm glad that we're connected and you're here on the show, man. But talk to us about your DJ story. Tell us about why you became a DJ and what sparked that initial interest, and just kind of walk us through those early days.
From an early age, I always had an interest in music, and there were points, you know, when you're young, when you're a kid, it kind of comes and goes. But I remember, you know, first seeing Run DMC and the Beastie Boys and even other maybe non-hip-hop acts like Peter Gabriel or Steve Winwood, Chaka Khan, Tina Turner, Madonna. Like, I was in Michael Jackson, of course, Prince, you know. I was a kid that grew up just with MTV on all the time. The radio was on all the time. There was music in the car. It was a musical household. So I think that's kind of the genesis of all that. As far as the DJ aspect, I started recording kind of like fake radio shows from my room when I was about, say, 11 or 12. And I would get friends to pretend to call, and I'd put up the recorder to the phone and say, yo, this is the number one song of the week, you know, Craig Mack or whatever, you know what I mean? Notorious B.I.G., you know, Big Pop is number one or whatever. So, you know, it was that's the early days right there.
Awesome, brother. Super exciting, man. And then talk to me like where you went from there. You know, you had that introduction to the music game and to DJing, and you're, you know, doing it with your friends and they're able to really have fun with it. But at what point were you able to transition it from just a hobby to something that's more of a business where you're actually getting paid for gigs and are able to really turn it into a career or something that's, you know, generating some income?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was such a gradual and slow process because I was just such a fan and a collector of music, and I never looked at it like an occupation or a job for a long time. It took a while to get there, because to me it was my passion, it's my hobby, it was like an escape. You know, I moved and switched to a lot of different schools and moved to different areas around New Jersey, but the thing that stayed consistent was the music, and that was always with me. You know, music is a great friend when you don't have any, you know, in certain areas. Not that I didn't have friends, but when you move to new places, you know, you go to a new school and, you know, you're like a mystery. Nobody knows who you are right away. So fast forward to, you know, sophomore year of high school. I had two, I'll tell this quick story just because I've told it so many times. But, you know, I'll give you the benefit for your podcast. I had two Sony boomboxes. I didn't have equipment right away. And I would stack the boomboxes on top of each other and transition song to song with the volume knobs. And I had a friend who saw me do that, and he was like, "Yo, that's dope. How you mix those songs?" I'm like, "Eh, you know, I don't have real equipment. I'm just playing around, you know." So he recommends me to this girl for a Sweet 16. And she asked if I could do it. And I was like, "Nah, you know, I don't have the right equipment for that, you know?" And she's like, "No, it's just that it's a house party. It's only gonna be like 25 people. You know, we know everybody there, you know, come on, you can do this." And I was like, "Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I could do that. That's no problem. You know, for 25 people, two boom boxes straight." So I do it, and it's exactly what she says it is, right? So we're getting into the party. Everybody's vibing, you know, we're 15, 16 years old. And, before you know it, there's about 100 kids in this house, and there's way too many people to support the sound that I'm bringing. And I'm using like a headset for a microphone, and it just isn't, you know, what it should be. And I got some mixed reviews that week. Some people loved what I was playing, and then others thought that the equipment was a little low rent, you know, and it was. But I didn't lie. I didn't tell anybody it was going to be different. But from that on, like I got that rush, that, you know, that, that feeling that you get when you rock a party, from playing music and people enjoying it. And that was kind of the first taste. So that's a quick version of that story. Moving from there, there were, I don't know if you remember, some of the firehouses used to have a lot of dances in the local area. And we would just, me and my boys, we would go to the firehouse and just, you know, just to party. The DJ there wasn't really getting it off. You know, he was a little, he was probably in his mid to late 20s, we're in our teens. So we know what's up. Teens always know what's up, even to this day. So I went over to his table and I said, let me check out your books. Let me see what you got. So I started flipping. He had CD books at the time. And there were a couple different compilations. One had ET Aliens by Outkast. And another had Everything Remix, Mary J. Blige. So I told him, I was like, I play these. He played them. Floor started packing. People were vibing. They're partying. They're getting into it. So he looked at me like, all right, okay. He's like, he goes, hey, man, bring your music next time, all right? Just bring whatever you got. I was like, all right, cool. So next time I get my Timberland box of CDs, get on the bus, 609 transit, take it up to Five Points, Mercerville, go to Mercerville Firehouse. I come in with my CD box and I start writing down on a piece of paper. I'm like, all right, you got to play on this one. You got to play track 10 and 15. This one, you got to play 1, 7, and 9. He cuts me off. He goes, "Now I want you to do it." I was like, and I had never played. It was a double Denon CD deck. I forget what kind of mixer he had, but you know, one of the rack mixers. It was like a club setup. You know, it was beyond the stuff I had at home, but I had a good idea of how to work it. So I was like, all right, so we'll go in. And from there on out, the those parties built up from, you know, maybe like 100 kids to like, to 1500, to the point where they had to shut it down.
Wow, man. No, that's so amazing, brother. It's crazy how you go from having the one accidental party that blew up to just kind of really being obsessed with being a DJ and catering to these larger crowds and eventually building a brand at a very young age of throwing these amazing parties, man. I think this is super exciting and super relevant for what we're doing and talking about the My DJ Story podcast, where you're sharing this story of how you were able to build this over time and how other DJs can do it as well. What we're going to do is take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the learning lessons and continue in your story, okay?
No doubt.
And we're back with the My DJ Story podcast. We're here with my brother, DJ Iron Mike, and he's sharing a phenomenal story about his journey in the DJ game. So where we left off, he was talking about throwing some really large parties that grew over time. Talk to us about the importance of building your brand and how it doesn't just happen overnight. It's something that is built upon over and over again by constantly delivering on your promise to help and entertain and support your audiences. So talk to me a little bit about the things that you did to grow that audience over time.
Yeah, networking is huge, you know, linking up with other DJs. You know, I think it's a false, you know, it's a bad move if you kind of keep to yourself or you keep a small circle, because there's something you can learn from everybody. You know, this is a huge community. You know, watching other DJs, learning from other DJs, whether it's, you know, somebody you know personally, or it's listening to some of the legends, you know, or maybe some local DJs in your area that you can hear on the radio or on, you know, on different apps or on the internet. You know, my dad always taught me, he said, whatever you do, you make sure that you eat, you drink, and you sleep it. So this, if you're going to go all the way with being a DJ, you have to really embrace it. And that means watching what, like I said, just picking up on other things. And to me, it's just like, say, when you listen to a famous guitar player, you know, they always ask, who is your favorite guitar player? Who was your influence? And they might say Jimi Hendrix or Eric Clapton or Carlos Santana or whoever, you know. So I think every DJ should have their favorite DJs and kind of draw little things from them. Not, you know, totally bite, but, you know, kind of find little spots that they can learn from.
Yeah, it's super good to be able to model from people. Then, you know, you adopt certain things, you make it your own, and then you become your own version of what they have, and you build on top of it. So there's nothing wrong with having influences and mentors that can teach you along the way that you are able to learn from and move quicker in your journey. You know, I'd love for you to continue on your story, kind of bring us closer to the present and some of the stuff you did, you know, after those early days as a young DJ, really rocking the parties.
Yeah, I want to rewind a little bit about the whole, you know, getting paid part. I had people, you know, telling me, they're like, you know, you need to start charging. Like, I had a partner, DJ Subliminal, in around 99, 2000. And his family would say, wait, what are you using our van for? You're going to go DJ and get nothing? You're not going to get paid? And I said, yeah, we're just doing it for fun, you know? And they didn't understand that. And they felt like, you know, there was a lot of value in what we were doing. So I slowly but surely started charging people, started working for small companies on the side. I felt that, and I'm not going to name any names because some of these companies are still active, but there were DJ companies I worked for that tried to fit me into their mold. And instead of just kind of letting me be me, say, they wouldn't even let me use turntables. It was everything back then with CDs. They didn't want me using records. It was a very strict format, and that was for a couple of these companies. And I didn't last long with them because I just felt like I was being, my creativity was being stifled, you know? So it took me a little bit. There was a point where I didn't even want to DJ weddings because I was so disenfranchised with the way companies do weddings. And a lot of times we would do weddings and it would be the same exact party every single week. They would play the same exact songs, same sequence, same order. And I lost my taste for it. I was still, you know, I was in the mindset that I wanted to play clubs and make mixtapes. But then you come to a crossroads where you realize that it's tough to make good money that way. I mean, you can. There's a lot of competition. But eventually, and I got with DJ Greg Ambient at Ambient DJs, started working there. And we had a great interview. Our first interview, he said, you know, I want you to be you. I want you to do what, you know, works for you. Also learn along the way what other people, like other tastes of music, other different things that you could be doing, other things that you can say on the mic. So it's kind of like a blending of the professionalism that I was learning there and then everything else I brought to the table.
That's great, brother. Super amazing, man. And I appreciate you just being so open and detailed with your story, because your story is what helped other people on their journey so they can figure out how to navigate through this industry and do well and learn from the things that you've experienced, man. Yeah, talk to us about some of the things that you're focused on now and how we can support and help you along your current journey.
Oh, well, right now, you know, everything is coming back, so to speak, even though I don't feel like I ever left. The day that you know, say like that weekend in March last year when everything shut down from the pandemic, I felt a need. I said, I'm not going to let this stop what I'm doing. I'm going to go right to my basement where I'm at right now. And I went live on Facebook. I wasn't even sure. It had been a little while since I had been on Facebook Live, because when it first became available, I would broadcast from places that I was DJing, like TGI Fridays. And which, don't laugh at TJ Fridays, a lot of people sleep on Fridays. North Brunswick Fridays for 5 years was the spot. But anyway, it had been a little bit since I used it, so I wasn't sure what the copyright situation was going to be. So I was like, let me just go on. And it was crazy. It was like the first week I was going on every single day, sometimes twice a day. We had like 100, you know, I was peaking at like 80 to 100 people watching for a little bit. It was just so fun. It was interactive. I wish I had more time to do it now that everything's opening up. But at the time, I had a lot of, you know, we all had a lot of spare time. And, you know, some DJs, I think, chose to complain and, you know, blame the epidemic, blame the pandemic. And say, oh, well, I can't do anything. I can't, you know, it's like, no, you got your place, you know, you figure it out no matter what, if you really want to do this. And yeah, so I think even though I had a really good brand going into that, I feel like that past year was so beneficial in kind of either reinforcing what people knew about me, or introducing myself to even maybe people that had never heard me DJ, that maybe I'd been, you know, connected to on social media for a long time, but they just, for whatever reason, didn't see me in a public outing or at an event. Not sure if that answered the question.
No, that was great, man. I appreciate you sharing that. And we love to talk about brand here, so I'm glad that you mentioned that. And talk to us a little bit about, you know, how you got your name, DJ Iron Mike, and what that brand means to you.
That's a great question. My original DJ name was DJ Sizzlin', which a lot of people laugh at. It's a play on my, you know, real name, Mike Bacon. But, you know, a lot of people had joked about it, so I was like, this isn't it. And I just had one of these moments, you know, obviously Iron Mike Tyson was huge, but the name Iron Mike had been used in other areas, and it's usually has a connotation of, you know, kind of strength. It comes from a point of strength. And I feel like I'm a hardworking DJ. You know, I've been labeled the hardest working DJ in New Jersey. Somebody said that before. I don't know if that's true, but I'm definitely one of them. But yeah, that's pretty much the genesis. It's one day, I'd say about 97, 98. It's like one of those moments where you think of something and you go, yeah, that's it. And it stuck with me. So yeah, that's where Iron Mike comes from. A lot of people will ask me if I went to Trenton Catholic or St. Anthony's McCorston, because that's their mascot, but I did not. So just to set the record straight.
Awesome, man. I love the story. Super organic and very fitting for you as a DJ, man. You know, talk to me a little bit about some of the things that you've learned throughout your journey, you know, particularly some of the things that you know now, being so experienced in the game, that you wish you knew when you were first getting started. So other DJs that are starting out now can not go through those same mistakes and kind of get those understandings today as they're getting in.
Oh, man. Yeah, definitely take chances, you know, take some risks. I hate watching in forums where somebody will ask, they'll say, hey, can you guys throw me a couple Spanish joints? I'm doing this party and, you know, I'm pretty good at Spanish. You know, I know some merengue, some bachata, but I need if you could send me a couple more bangers. And then there will always be somebody that says something to the effect of, you should give that party to somebody else since you don't know what you're doing. But, you know, we can't all be at the same party at the same time. So sometimes the only way to learn is to actually do it. And sometimes you need that influence from somebody else that knows a little bit more than you. So, you know, I always say, you know, definitely listen to other people, you know, check out other people. Like I kind of touched on that earlier. But yeah, definitely DJ anywhere you can. A big issue right now that I'm seeing with some of the startup DJs, some of the younger DJs, is that they're expecting big money out of the gate. And it's not always there unless you're some sort of freak in nature and you have a great, you just adapted to DJing so perfectly and you're amazing or whatever. You have a good look or you have a good presence or whatever. 99 times out of 100, that's not the case. And I feel that you have to do some low rent stuff, whether it's free or very little money. I played at spots for $20, for $25 in my late teens, early 20s. And it's really all about building your brand, building, letting people know who you are. If you're not out there yet, you know, you have to get out there. You have to do things to build there. This isn't a job where you apply and you say, okay, I want to make $100,000 a year, and then they go, okay, great, you're hired, and you just start DJing. It doesn't work that way. So really, you have to get out there and you have to take every opportunity you can. And I'm still doing that to this day. You know, that during the pandemic, there were some opportunities that I took that a lot of DJs I know that are at my level of experience that would have laughed at it. And maybe the money wasn't great. I said, but I'm getting out there. I don't care if I got to wear a mask, and I'm going to be out there, and I want to work. I want to keep this thing going, because I'm going to, you know, as a DJ, I'm going to die if I'm not doing it. And I know, you know, guys that are close to me that unfortunately they've left the business because it just, during that whole situation, you know, they became stagnant and stale, and they weren't working, and they kind of lost their connection. That's my long-winded answer on that.
It was great, man. Super great insight and advice, man. You know, you talked about being known as one of the hardest working DJs in New Jersey, and me being a super hard entrepreneur and working hard on my business. I know that there's a lot of things that I do that the public will never, ever see in my grind. What are some things that you do in your business as a DJ that people will never see, and other DJs need to know that it has to be done for them to be successful? No one would ever see it or give you credit for it. What are some of those things that you're doing that maybe not be seen by the public, but super important to building yourself as a DJ?
That's a great question. So it's like things that don't show up on the stat sheet, like that kind of player. I mean, just really grinding on social media. And I social media can be tedious. You know, you have to constantly be making connections, even if you're swiping through and you're liking posts. You know what I mean? You can't just exist on social media. There are a lot of DJs that just go, okay, here's my page, I'm going to post, and then I'm just going to like lay back and let it marinate or whatever, and then I'll go back to that later. But it really is it's a day in, day out hustle. And I don't want it to feel like, when I use the word hustle, I don't want to make it feel like I'm fooling anybody or I'm being disingenuous. You know, I want to legit connect with my audience. And I feel like I've done a really good job with that with social media. You know, you're getting me. I tell a lot of stories on Facebook and Instagram about, you know, crazy requests. And most recently, I played up a lot on the idea of ShopRite having a good playlist. And a lot of people around our age in the 30s and 40s, they agree. So I kind of took it to the next level. I said, well, instead of just talking about it, why don't I make a playlist? So I made one on Spotify, and like 50 people, you know, followed it like in the first couple of days. It was crazy. But yeah, not just existing. You know, not just, like I said, just kind of standing out there. You really have to constantly connect with people, connect with different vendors. If you're in the wedding industry, which that could be a whole nother podcast. you know, linking up with venues, linking up with photographers, with videographers, anybody that's involved with weddings, wedding planners, anybody. Anybody at all that does it, especially in your local area, in your state, in your tri-state area, you know, I think that needs to be a day in, day out situation. But yeah, as far as other things, you know, just trying to be creative. You know, there's so many of us, so you have to figure out a way to stand out. And, you know, even if I'm on Twitch, you know, I'm not the most technical savvy, you know, person when it comes to computers. So I don't have all the crazy graphics, but I do have the physical elements in the background. So I want that to be eye catching. If I'm not, you know, giving you the craziest, say like DJ scene type of show, you know what I mean? So, you know, once again, being creative, I think is the most, ideal way to handle that.
I love it, man. That's really great advice. And the small details matter, and lean on your strengths and do whatever you can to be your authentic self and add value to your audiences in whatever ways you can, and put in the work. You know, you are speaking to one of the hardest working DJs in New Jersey, and he's done the work, and you can see the fruit of his labor. And we appreciate you, brother. At this time, we're going to jump into the lightning round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Awesome. Describe your DJ setup, hardware and software.
Okay, so I got, I go one Technique 1210. I'm a righty. And once I learned, DJ Father Ramsey years ago, probably about 15 years ago, taught me how to use instant doubles. as soon as I learned that, because I'm bad on my left, I just stayed with one turntable. So one Technics 1210. I have a Serato Rain 72, which I love. That is my favorite mixer to date. If you want a good, if you're not a, what you call it, a controller person, go with that mixer. That mixer is such a beast. It changed my game. I'm so glad that I bought it a couple years ago. And so yeah, you got that. As far as for speakers, I use QSC 12s. And I don't know if you need anything else on that.
That's good. Who's your favorite DJ?
Oh man, I got a list, man. I actually posted a video about this on YouTube from another podcast that I did. It kind of changes, but I like different DJs for different reasons. Jazzy Jeff is high on the list. DJ Riz is high on the list. DJ Dogtime, Ron G, Kid Capri, DJ Clue and Funkmaster Flex were huge influences on me. Mr. C is, a huge influence. I could go on and on, man. Like I said earlier, I think it's key to listen to a lot of different DJs growing up. So you can figure out why they do what they do, because you're also a fan, you know what I mean? And you want to be able to make other people feel the way that you feel. So lightning round, keep going.
What has been your favorite party or event you've DJed at and why?
Wow. There's so many ways I can answer that. You got an hour? The all-time favorite, man. I see, when I think of favorite, it's not exactly the best, or it's not the most lavish event. But the first thing that comes to my mind, me and DJ Spins, the homie DJ Spins, my boy Chris Smith, we used to work together at WMCC at Mercer County Community College. Also shout out to DJ Big J, who I had linked up with there as well. And then after college, we've kind of gone our separate ways. When MySpace came out, we linked back up. And he had kind of fallen away from the industry. He was taking a break. He wasn't really into it at the time. And I said, "Nah, man, you're good, man. You gotta, come on, let's go do this party." So we did this party at Rutgers, and that joint went on until 6 a.m. Like, we were getting White Castle with the sun coming up. That to me is the first thing I think of. I had a residency in Atlantic City in 2013. There was a night where Naughty by Nature, were performing at the pool. I was working at Exhibition Bar, which is kind of like the lounge. And security guard tells me, he's like, "Oh, Tretch is here." I was like, I'm like, that's like one of my all-time favorite groups. So, there's kind of an unwritten rule that you don't play an artist's music when they're there. But something told me, there was this thing that was inside of me that said, this is what you wanted to do ever since you were a kid. And I remember making Best of Naughty by Nature tapes. So I said, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to go in, play every banger you got. And I hit this set of 45, 50 minutes of all Naughty by Nature, even throwing freestyles he did that he came up to me. He was very complimentary. He said, "I haven't heard some of those joints you played in years. I forgot I made some of that," we connected on Twitter and all that. So it was cool. So that's one, man, I could go on forever, man. I've had a lot of great parties, a lot of great memories. And I got to DJ my own wedding for about 15 minutes. That was a cool moment. My boy DJ Demand, he DJed my wedding. He said, "Look, at one point, I want you to do a set." I was like, "Nah, man, nah, you go ahead, you perform. This is your thing. And I'm like, my wife's not gonna be crazy about that." So he kept on telling me to do it. And I go, I tell my wife, she goes, "Yeah, go ahead." She's like, "What are you gonna be on for, a half hour?" And I said, no, like 10 minutes or something. She said, "Oh, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, do that." So there came a point where he had told me, "Come up on the stage and go do it." So I start walking on the stage, and all of a sudden you feel this is all my favorite people and my wife's favorite people in the same place, and family. And I get on stage, and I start getting set up, and they know what's about to happen, I just feel like this roar of like the crowd, 150 people. It sounded like 1,000 people in my head. And they're just going nuts because like I'm about to go do the set. And I played a pretty basic set because it was like, you don't want to go crazy and try all this crazy, you know, transitions or something when, you know, you got family and friends there. But that's another great moment.
Who's the most interesting person you've met throughout your career as a DJ?
Oh, man. You know, like I just said, you know, Tretch was a good one. I just posted about this yesterday, but I got to briefly meet Dick Gregory. I DJed alongside DJ Functual. We did the after party for Joe Morton's play Turn Me Loose, which was based on the life of Dick Gregory. So the after party had, obviously Dick Gregory was there, Joe Morton, John Legend, Chrissy Teigen, Wesley Snipes was there, Nick Cannon was there. There were artists and actors, actresses that I recognized that I didn't know by name, but I was like, oh, I know that one from the show. You know what I mean? That was a wild night. So that to me is interesting. Anybody else? I mean, those are the main ones that come to mind right away.
What's one thing that you think is missing from live streaming for DJs?
Ooh, man. I should have thought about that before we talked about that. What is missing? What do I like? Or what would I like to have? Well, I really feel like, you know, this is going to be obvious, but a lot of the social media companies, the apps, they need to work out a deal with the record company somehow. And, you know, I'm not going to throw shade at D-Nice because he's allowed to get away with it. I just did, I guess. But yeah, somehow we need to work together and let this happen. You know what I mean? Because we're not giving away complete tracks that people can own. A lot of this is being mixed. It's not the entire song. It's, you know, portions of songs, or it's different versions that, you know, aren't sold out in the mainstream, or it's, you know, music that, you know, probably isn't on the charts right now, but could benefit from it if all of these DJs are playing it. You know, I'm pretty sure that some of the spectators, the viewers, the people that have watched our shows have gone out and listened to those artists on another platform or found that song because of something we played. I completely believe in that. So yeah, it would be nice if they could work that out. Otherwise, I mean, Twitch is great for everything that it offers and everything that it does. Just, you know, unfortunately, you just can't save a lot of the content that you play. So what I do is with a lot of the videos, the live streams that I did on Facebook and on Twitch, I save and I'll reload them up to, I'll upload them onto YouTube. And YouTube is a little bit more user-friendly with copyright. They'll let you know that you have copyrighted music, and they'll be okay with it as long as, you know, your video isn't monetized, which is fine with me. I'm okay with that. You know, just as long as me mixing and, you know, kind of me and my environment is out there and playing what I like to play or what other like people like to hear is out there. So yeah, lightning round. Like I said, I can dive in it. Every topic, man, you throw
out. Awesome. And shout out to any DJs that you know personally whose stories also need to be shared on this podcast.
Oh, I think DJ Spins would be a great, you know, I'm going to hit him up after this and tell him, you know, you should do this. He's got a great story. My boy DJ Demand has a great story. He can talk all day. There are a lot of guys. I know you already had Big J on here. He was our connection. And he is great when it comes to branding. He cannot be messed with. Yeah, who else? Yeah, William H. would be a great one. And we have a little crew. DJ E, he's got a podcast called The Porch. You know, I'm sure he would be great to talk to. DJ Koki, you know, that's the homie. My boy Jay Tobin, I think, would be great to talk to. I could go on and on.
Awesome, man. We'd love to hear their stories on the show. And any DJ that's interested in being on the show can sign up at djsignup.com. And brother, where can people find you online or even in person if you're still doing events?
All right. So on social media, mostly everything is DJ at DJ Iron Mike NJ, because there are a couple other DJ Iron Mikes out there. So I want to distinguish myself between them and myself. So it's at DJ Iron Mike NJ on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, on all the stuff. Mixcloud, definitely check out the Mixcloud page. I got a lot of stuff there. Got a series of 90s R&B mixes on there. I post pretty regularly. Been a little slow lately, but I got some stuff on deck. Out there, I'm regularly at Decades in Hamilton right now, which is a retro spot. We're doing 70s, 80s, 90s music, which is cool. I think there's a huge audience for that. The place has a lot of memorabilia, and it's got great sound system, great lighting. So if you're in the Hamilton, Trenton area, highly recommend. It's inside the Sticky Wicket, but it's now called Decades, the inside of it. I got some other things coming up. Red Rock and Red Bank is going to be coming through in the summer. We were doing that for NFL Sundays. I would DJ there, then play the games, and in between commercial breaks, you know, I'd mix a little bit and then go back to switch the audio in the game, whatever the featured game was. That's going to be coming back pretty soon. But yeah, those are the main things off the top of my head. Fridays in Wachung, I'll be there over the summer. Fridays in North Brunswick, waiting on it. There are unfortunately, certain accounts that, you know, were shut down and never came back, or I'm still waiting for them to come back, through the pandemic. Sophia in Inglewood, I'm there regularly. That's a great spot. Check that out. Make sure you look them up. That's up in North Jersey. That's a real nice vibe there. I played all throughout the whole, through 2020, that place. There were certain places that just were able to stay open to a certain degree and allow DJs. And I really appreciate what they did, because they didn't have to have us. A lot of places, they cut us out of the budget and they say it's not worth it or whatever. And they believed in DJs. So shout out to Sophie and Inglewood.
Awesome, man. This was an amazing interview. I learned a lot, and I know our audience learned a lot as well. You have a tremendous story, and we're looking forward to staying in touch with you throughout the rest of your journey in the DJ game. So everyone, please check out my brother, DJ Iron Mike. He's from my hometown, Trenton, New Jersey. And we really appreciate you spending time with us today, brother. And we look forward to just building with you going on from here.
Thank you, Daryl. Appreciate you having me. And, I like what you're doing, and just keep doing it, you know.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for listening to the My DJ Story podcast. If you haven't already, please join our community by downloading the Club app for free in the Google Play and App Store today. While you're there, do us a huge favor by giving us a 5-star rating and shoot us a message on Instagram telling us you did. I'd love to send you a free My DJ Story podcast t-shirt as a token of our appreciation. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to seeing you in the club.